Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is June 24th, 2010. You're listening to show number 37 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will be reading aphorism number 104. And we've got quite a bit of things to talk about today, both our inspirational Twitter quotes and also our study of Hahnemann, plus a little bit about what's going on in the world today regarding homeopathy. Vera might be on the line. I'll check with her. Oh, not yet in yet. So let's see. Dr. Rashmi Chanana is on Twitter, and she's also a homeopath on Homeopathy World Community. She's been doing quite a few fantastic quotes, and I'd like to call out, give a shout out to her. Thank you so much. One of the things she's quoted is Ralph Sockman. It says, "Nothing is so strong as gentleness, and nothing is so gentle as true strength." And I'm sure we could do probably an entire show just about that one little quote. Homeopathy itself is a very gentle acting mode of healing. And also, it is so strong in its actions, and it can heal a person very deeply in all aspects of their life. I see that Vera is with us now. So, Vera, I was just doing a couple of Twitter quotes from Dr. Rashmi Chanana.
Hi.
And we're having some sound problems today. I'm hoping that everyone on the internet and on HWC is able to hear me. Okay, and then also, Dr. Rashmi also says, failure is the opportunity to begin again, a bit more intelligently. So in this way, we learn from our mistakes, and we don't have to call it a failure. We can call it a success when we actually take the information that's given to us and apply it in a special way that makes things better for our future. And another quote that Rashmi has really given us tons to think about. This one is one of my favorite ones. It's called Vision is the Art of Seeing Things Invisible. I don't know who was the author of that quote, but it really means a lot to me. It reminds me of the genius of Hahnemann. I think if somebody a visionary, if somebody can really see, then I would call them a genius. But he was able to look where others were blind, where they couldn't see, and to see those things that are invisible to the naked eye in one way, in terms of when we're talking about contagious disease. And also, when something is right in front of our face, all of the symptoms that are being given. So all of those symptoms are right in front of our face, and he is the one to tell us to look at them and listen to the person's voice and hear what they have to say, because their inner self, what perhaps is invisible to us, becomes externalized when they speak to us in language. I'm wondering if Vera has got back on the line and we're able to hear her today.
Hi, I got back online. I hear you not the clearest,
okay.
But we'll go with it. Can you hear me?
We're having a little bit of fuzziness on the internet today, and I was just going through a couple of fantastic quotes. I'm just so excited about Rashmi and what she's given us as lessons to learn from.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's okay, there's just one more. This is from Dr. Sushil Bal on our HWC. He writes, knowledge is not information. It's transformation. And to me, this means that transformation only comes with what you do with this knowledge. Do you ignore the information that's being presented to you? Or how do you apply it? It really spins us all the way back to Rashmi's failure is the opportunity to begin again more intelligently. So learning from what's before you, the knowledge that you have at hand. Okay, I believe we're going to start aphorism 104. We read it the last time, but we did not actually discuss it.
Okay, would you like to read it, Debbie?
Aphorism 104. When the totality of the symptoms that specially mark and distinguish the case of disease, or in other words, when the picture of the disease, whatever be its kind, is once accurately sketched, the most difficult part of the task is accomplished. The physician has then the picture of the disease, especially if it be a chronic one, always before him to guide him in his treatment. He can investigate it in all its parts and can pick out the characteristic symptoms in order to oppose to these, that is to say, to the whole malady itself, a very similar artificial morbific force in the shape of a homeopathically chosen medicinal substance, selected from the lists of symptoms of all the medicines whose pure effects have been ascertained. So here we are. Do you want me to, there's a little bit more. And when during the treatment he wishes to ascertain what has been the effect of the medicine and what change has taken place in the patient's state, at this fresh examination of the patient, he only needs to strike out of the list of the symptoms noted down at the first visit those that have become ameliorated to mark what still remain and add any new symptoms that may have supervened. Okay, he gives us a summary there. What are we looking for?
Well, one of the things that I find interesting, the whole discussion, not just of case taking, but of case writing down, is that sometimes you're sitting with a patient and the discussion becomes intense. The patient is unburdening, or the patient is going very fast, or whatever it might be, and you don't want to interfere with the dynamic that's being formed in the treatment room. I know I sometimes find it's a problem because I want to write everything down. And on the other hand, even the process of writing, sometimes I find even the process of breathing, I try to do it quietly so as not to interrupt the patient when they're in full flow, because I know that what they're going to say now is not going to be repeated so easily. So it's a dilemma, but I find that when I don't write and I try to remember so as not to disturb the flow, I don't remember enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we still come back to writing everything down or typing everything in, however we do it, that it's such an essential part of the case taking.
Well, you know, I actually have a way that I record. So I have a camera and the person is sitting in front of me and everything is recorded. So hopefully it's there for me to review later on if I feel like I've missed anything, or you could use a tape recorder. There are many ways that you can document the information that you think might be missing, or you want to retain even what the person is in that state of being that you're talking about, that intensity when they're talking very quickly or they're making hand gestures or body motions or the way that they're breathing, whatever it might be, you can capture that on with technology today.
It's actually an interesting point. Is it better to take a case and write notes or type notes, or is it better just to doodle a bit and record the whole thing?
We do it all. use whatever is helpful to you.
No, personally, I find when I'm actually writing down, part of me is already filtering. I'm only writing certain things. I'm not writing every word. Although I remember when I was a student, we were all writing every word, and we would come out of any case taking with our hands and our shoulders totally killing us. But I don't write down every word. I make a note of what has changed. I make a note of specific things. As a result, I find that my case-taking notes are usually much less than they used to be. They used to be pages and pages, and now they will be sort of 1, 2, maybe 3 pages, but that's rare.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that some people attempted not to take notes at all, just to go with recording,
mm-hmm.
just to preserve the rapport with the patient. I wonder if there's anyone out there that does that.
Right. It is true, because the fact that we are taking notes and our mind is working to discern things, we're not 100% there with the individual. We are partially doing that filtering process, like you say, if you make a note of this has changed or this particular symptom is being emphasized. So it's true that there is a dynamic between the individual and the two people who are sitting in the room. How you do that, I think, becomes your style. I think that each person develops a mode of working.
I know I've had some people be very suspicious when they see that I work with a computer. It's like, mm-hmm. what, you're taking my words down on the computer? No, I'm playing solitaire. One of the most interesting things here is that Hahnemann says, just to repeat his words, he says, when the totality of the symptoms that specially mark and distinguish the case of disease, or in other words, when the picture of the disease, whatever be its kind, is once accurately sketched, the most difficult part of the task is accomplished. Now that's interesting.
Yes.
That's the most difficult part. You would think afterwards and choosing a remedy and case management. Just getting it down correctly is the most difficult part.
Well, perhaps, you know, his mode of working is similar to what you have described, where he does not take word for word, but he does mark what is most distinguishable about this particular case. And if then he has defined what the case is in the proper picture, then the answer is easy for him. So in the same way, if he's written down something that's inaccurate, you know, he's emphasizing one thing when it should be something else, then he did not complete what he considers the most difficult part of the case taking. So if you draw the picture beautifully, you know, if you're Michelangelo or if you're just a child, you know, how do you draw the picture? That's the hardest part. Maybe that's the skill in able to. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I think also possibly we can take a metaphor if we just move on another sentence. The physician has then the picture of the disease, especially if it be a chronic one, always before him to guide him in his treatment. And one of the image that presented itself to me was a wanted poster for the Wild West. You know, if you're looking for a criminal, as long as the picture on the wanted poster is correct, then you know who you're looking for. But if the picture on the wanted poster is incorrect, then there's no way you're going to find the person you're looking for. If we have our picture on our wanted poster of disease correctly, then there's a chance we'll find a remedy that matches. But if the picture on our wanted poster is incorrect, if we didn't take the case right and didn't note it down correctly, it's like both elements. First, we need to do the case taking in the way that will get us the information we want. And we need to make sure we note down that information in a way that's clear to us. Once we have those parts, we have the face on the wanted poster. We know what we're going after in terms of matching a similar.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two items there. One is that remedies can be an imposter. You could have somebody that looks like somebody else. So,
Well, we're looking for a similar.
Right, but many of the remedies are very similar to each other, so their pictures might look kind of the same. And then the other thing is what you said, noting down correctly, but doesn't Lycopodium have one of the symptoms is they can't read their own writing? And so that could also be, we need to be able to make our notes that we understand what it is that we were writing and be able to read them, because if you scribble and you can't read it, you're in trouble. So there's ways, I guess, there's so many things that can throw us off to getting the correct picture or even knowing what we wrote down, what we thought was the correct picture, but maybe that's why he keeps saying that's the hardest part, the beginning. I guess, you know, if you are directing a telescope or trying to throw a ball, and if you at the beginning have half a percent, a fraction of a percent off, you're ending up miles, miles away from where you need to be in your trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's another way of looking at it. Let's see. So is there anything else in Aphorism 104 here?
Okay. Well, we're talking about looking for a similar, more biphic force. And I think this last part also we'd want to bring out. And when, during the treatment, he wishes to ascertain what has been the effect of the medicine and what change has taken place in the patient's state. At this fresh examination of the patient, he only needs to strike out the list of symptoms noted down at the first visit that have been ameliorated, to mark what still remain, and add any new symptoms that may have supervened. We mentioned in the last session, and to re-mention today, as the best way to summarize this section, is that this is what we need to review in follow-up. We talked about case-taking in this whole section, but in follow-up, we need to review what's become ameliorated, cross those symptoms out. What still remains, note that. Add any new symptoms that have come into play in the meantime, note that.
And so I don't know. I don't know if you have a method for that. I create kind of a checklist, a feedback form, and I would even ask, you know, from 0 to 10, where are these symptoms for you? And just go through them, and the person very often will say, oh, gee, I forgot about that when I haven't had it at all, and they didn't even remember that they were having these headaches or some other kind of pain. And so you can really take a good look at the progress of the case by having this feedback information.
I tend to ask for percentage improvements. I ask patients to try and quantify. And very often the percentage improvement is very surprising, because sometimes in words they're saying, well, this is there and this is there and this is there. And I ask, has anything improved? They say, oh, yes, I feel 80% improved. So I'm thinking, well, you could smile while you're saying that.
So I call that progress. They say, well, we've moved. We're in a better place, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's really provided us a method to deal with how to take a case and how to follow up and see where we need to go. So we have a little bit of time left. If there's anything else you wanted to, is there an umbrella for this particular session?
It really seems to be, if you start with a solid basis, then that will define how the rest of your case taking and case follow-up runs, and your accuracy of prescription.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be what's going on.
Right. I'd say maybe if you draw a good picture, you will see what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Okay. And then if it's okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about what's happening on Homeopathy World Community and in the homeopathic world in general.
Okay, Debbie, go ahead.
Okay. I've recently posted a new banner on the front page that's Save Homeopathy. There's going to be a protest at Brighton Center in the UK on June 29th, 2010. It seems that there's always been oppositional forces to homeopathy throughout history, and sometimes it's more prominent than at other times. So we are so thankful to Homeopathy Medicine for the 21st Century, which is an organization based in the UK, and that provides a campaign for homeopathy to provide access to information and research for homeopaths, patients, and other people who are interested in supporting the diversity in medical approaches. I feel like in our world today, I'm in the United States, there's a lot of campaigns for health freedom and choice, health freedom choices for people without being mandated by government. And one of those choices would hopefully be homeopathy. So throughout the centuries, homeopathy has been attacked for many various reasons and by different oppositional factions. We know as a fact that iatrogenic disease is very, very prevalent. That is a disease that's caused by medical treatment. And because the medical societies and overall are going through a rough time in their own history, it seems in some way to remove the what seems to be where people are tending to go. CAM, complementary alternative medicine, today is rising in favor by the general population, and because of that, I feel as if the medical establishment feels as if they're being threatened in some way. Do you have that same situation where you are, or have you noted that in the world situation?
Well, I see there's a lot going on. I don't follow it that closely.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very impressed with the people who are active and are constantly mm-hmm. fighting the issues over the internet and on the different skeptics boards. There does seem to be rather more activity than makes sense, so there's an implication that there's some very strong backing for it.
Right. And so what's happening this coming week, it's only a few days away, there's going to be 7 motions against homeopathy being proposed at the British Medical Association, the BMA, annual conference. And I think it would be very wise of people to go onto this article and take a look at the 7 things that they're trying to do. One of the things about it is that they're giving negative information about homeopathy itself. However, the conclusion is that they want to remove funding, which takes us back to the economic situation in the world. We're in a downturn, we're in a recession, and money is tight. And they're saying, they're almost as if the 6 motions above, number 301, 301 A, B, C, D, E, and F, They want to cut the funding due to the economic crisis. Now, we know that the amount given to homeopathy is minuscule compared to what's given elsewhere, but the thinking on their part is this is one way to remove what people are really clamoring for. People are being treated very well through homeopathy, through their system, through their hospitals, through their care of the well-trained homeopaths. And we just need to really support this protest against the opposition. What other things? And please, if you're there, learn what kinds of things that you can say to support homeopathy. And we've been through this before. We've just finished having this mass lobby of the parliament, and same HMC 21 had entered 28,000 people who had signed the declaration that homeopathy worked for me. So it's crazy that they should ignore actual fact and published articles and things that show at a both cellular and organism level that it works on plants, that it works on people and pets. They're totally ignoring those actual facts put in front of them if they continue to say that it works. So I've kind of gotten up on my lectern here to talk about it. Fortunately, there's somebody named David Tredinick, who is in support of homeopathy, and I understand that he is going to do some pro work in this venue for Great Britain. So I'm hoping that people will get there and support this work and turn things around for England. Okay, we're just about out of time. The only other thing that I would want to say is if you need to get oppositional information, talk about iatrogenic disease. It's the third cause of death in the United States. There's 250,000 total deaths per year due to this problem with therapies, inaccurate surgeries, medical drugs that cause so many deaths and side effects. Okay.
Okay.
Is there anything else? Okay, I kind of got on my high horse there and want to lead the troops to battle. But in any way, study, get your Organon off the shelf and read it. And we'll see you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.